The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 456, recorded on February 8th, 2017. Welcome to the 456th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 289th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and gaming history. So yeah, we're actually going to do a gaming history this time, and it's going to be an infamous gaming history. We hope you enjoy it. We'll probably have a lot of comments about that. We also have listener feedback from two episodes ago. The reason why we didn't have it on the last episode is that I didn't check, so I have to be more vigilant in checking for listener feedback. So, what have you been playing, TJ?
I started Nio.
Neo.
I don't know. I've heard both ways, but Team Ninja's latest game. And their try at the whole Dark Souls style.
They're kicking ass because Jim Sterling gave it a 10 out of 10.
It is pretty darn great. It's a lot of the things I like about Dark Souls without having too many of the things I hate about Dark Souls yet.
Which are?
Difficult, but not like, oh my god, this is absurd. Why? What are you even supposed to do about that? Like, bosses are hard, but they also have a lot of ways around their attacks. Whereas, like, in most of the Dark Souls game, the first time you go into a boss for the first time, like, getting a look at their style for the first time, they're going to kill you just because it's impossible to know what's coming.
Well, you know, remember Team Ninja did Ninja Gaiden. And
right.
The Ninja Gaiden games were really difficult, but they were fair difficult. It wasn't like it was a bullshit kill on you. It's more like, oh, that's what I did wrong. It was my fault. I did it wrong. Are you saying Nio is like that, in which if you die, it's your fault, not the game's fault?
Yeah, and there's a lot of old Ninja Gaiden in there that just feels right. Like, just, I mean, one of the odd things about Dark Souls is that you don't really, it's not really all that graphic outside of just like some disturbing monsters. And this, in Nio, you're just straight up chopping people's arms, legs, and heads off left and right because that's straight up the Ninja Gaiden style. And I love that. I a little bit of brutality goes a long way in a game like that.
that's the U.S. military's credo right there right now.
Well, at least you're not killing women and children in this game.
You have to go play Deus Ex for that. How about you, Scott? What have you been playing aside from Minecraft?
I've been playing Pillars of Eternity, getting farther on that. I went the route of a paladin this time. My last character was a rogue, and I felt like just doing different choices this time. Because the last time I did some choices I wasn't really happy with. Because there's a point where, you know, in some games where there's a point where you join a faction and you're on that faction side. I wasn't aware of where that point was, and they didn't really make it clear. And, I mean, all I wanted to do was return a guy's armor, but apparently that's the line right there. They're like, no, you can't do that. Now you're on their side. And so I ended up not really agreeing with the group that I was with. So now I'm going to go and redo that and be a little bit happier with my choices, so that way when I import those choices into the next game, I'll feel happier with those.
I was about to ask if this replay had anything to do with the fact that Pillars of Eternity 2 could import your old saves.
Yeah, definitely, yes, that is one reason. And also, even if you don't play the first one, you can still alter your choices. I'm not sure how you'll do that, probably like a questionnaire in the beginning. And then you'll like pick it and then go from there.
Okay. As for me, I've just been doing a lot of Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare 2 because it has the perfect multiplayer of any game out there right now. And I'm telling you, if you want great multiplayer, play that game. I don't care how cutesy it may appear. It's really solid. It does Battlefield right, you know. Everything is perfectly balanced. And even though certain types of combat may seem like, oh, they're getting... There's a lot of rock, paper, scissors in it. I've also been playing... what is it called? Oh, yeah. I've also been playing Mysterium, if I can find games online, because it's really difficult, because no one's playing it, it seems like. And it's really hard. I mean, there is a single-player mode, but it's a game in which you're looking at abstract picks. And if you're only playing with the computer, it's sort of like one of the hidden object games, except really, really difficult, because you have to scan these things really close up to see if there's any connectivity. At least with humans, you can sort of like, well, all these cards are yellow, so I guess he's trying to say it's the yellow card, you know. But yeah, Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare 2, really good. I wish more people were playing. Feels like there's only one server with all the lag sometimes. I think it's about time we start talking about games that are coming up in the next few months, because two of the biggies to me, Injustice 2 and Mass Effect Andromeda, are looking really good, especially Injustice 2. It's been a long while since I've been looking forward that much to a fighting game, but they're just doing everything right, it seems like.
Yeah, and the first one was just so good, and like, if anyone has their craft on lockdown right now, it's NetherRealm Studios.
Yeah.
Like, they have been on an upturn since the reboot of Mortal Kombat, Mortal Kombat 9, or Mortal Kombat in 2011.
I like DCU versus Mortal Kombat, though. I mean, yeah, people would complain, well, it wasn't bloody enough. Well, yeah, but it was really good. And I like the story, too.
Yeah, you're right. That actually is a better point of probably... Well, did that come out before Mortal Kombat 9?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I think they were embarrassed the fact that, you know... I'm going to tell you something. Some of those brutalities by the DC heroes look like fatalities. I mean, Green Lantern, putting you in a little green ball and then making it the size of a beach ball, that's got to be deadly. That's got to hurt.
Yeah. NetherRealm is just, like, game after game, been doing better and better and better.
And the best part is Injustice is basically... mixing it up with Soul Calibur. So you have Soul Calibur meets Injustice with Injustice 2.
Yeah, are you talking about the equipable stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I saw some videos. This guy made an all-golden Blue Beetle, you know, with the special equipment that he got. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what I can do with Superman.
I would love for them to put Booster Gold in that game. I don't know if it'll happen, but with Blue
DLC,
Beetle in there...
Come on, DLC.
Well, I mean, with Blue Beetle in there, it's definitely a possibility.
I'd like to see... I wonder if Big Barda would ever come in there. I mean, it would be come over.
Yeah. Injustice needs a female Bruiser.
I mean, Wonder Woman is, but you know... But Big Barda is just a big hulking Amazon, even more so than... Red Tornado would be great. I think he already isn't. I have to check the roster. Red Tornado would be perfect.
What I mean by Bruiser, I mean like, you got Wonder Woman, you got Supergirl, but I'm talking like the female version, the female equivalent of Bane and Doomsday. That's what Big Bart is.
Red Tornado was in the first, he was in Justice Comic. Okay. But it would be nice if we see... He was in the first game. So I'm pretty sure, you know what, they're talking about an episode. I mean, Red Tornado would be perfect because he has so many powers that would work well in a Mortal Kombat type situation. You know? Who else is not in the... it would be great. How about this? Swamp Thing.
I've heard people say that. And I don't know why, but I just can't see him in the story that they're doing right now.
Oh, why not? Oh, how about Firestorm?
I can see Swamp Thing as a DLC character, like definitely a wanted DLC character, but I can't see him in the main story at all.
I mean, you have Darkseid as a playable character. He's not in the main story, though.
Yeah. Captain Cold. I don't know how they haven't put him in yet.
Yeah. Or, for that matter, who's the other guy? I mean, well, they did have Killer Frost in Injustice, in the first Injustice.
Yeah, but like, as far as the flat, like, they got most of the people's villains in there that are pretty good, but they don't have the big ones like Captain Cold or Cheetah.
I'm pretty sure, yeah, Cheetah would be a good idea. I'm thinking if they do have Reverse Flash, but it's just a new skin for I think they do have Reverse Flash. Another DLC will be John Stewart Green Lantern. Mm-hmm. I'm really surprised they have Atrocitus. I mean, it makes sense. But having the Red Lantern, although I'm glad that Dexstar comes with him.
Yeah.
Anybody who's worried, for those who don't know who Dexstar is, it's a house cat with a Red Lantern ring, and he's vicious. As a matter of fact, according to DC, he's the most violent of any of the Lanterns.
Mm-hmm.
So Brother Eye is going to be in Injustice too. Not a playable character, but I found that interesting. Black Manta is in Injustice 2, but he's not going to be playable.
That's a shame.
Yeah. The Trench Queen as well. Anyways, the other thing is that I'm holding out hope that Mass Effect Andromeda doesn't suck. So how about, Scott, what games that are coming really soon are you looking forward to? Scott, you can turn off the mute.
Yeah, I'm not aware of any that are coming out really soon that I'm looking forward to. I think the only thing is Pillars of Eternity 2.
And that's not anytime soon. Is it still in crowdfunding? Is it still being crowdfunded, or is it crowdfunding ended?
It's on Fig, so yes.
It's still being crowdfunded?
Yes, on Fig, yes.
Oh, okay.
I can't think of it. Oh, no, that's out already. No, nothing. No.
How about you, TJ?
For Honor, hands down.
Okay.
I've been all about the idea of knights versus samurai versus Vikings since I heard about it, and there is nothing that's going to turn me off to that idea until I play it, and it either sucks or I'm just in love with it for the rest of the year. That's probably going to be my Rainbow Six Siege of 2017.
Okay. I'm quickly going through here. Oh yeah, Halo Wars 2 is coming out in 2 weeks. And there's a lot. I've seen the cutscenes. They were leaked on YouTube. They look pretty good. I mean, at least the YouTube. Oh wait. Okay. Actually, I know a game you might be looking forward to, Scott. How about Torment: Tides of Numenera? It's coming out on the 28th. Scott? Scott?
Is he still with us?
Yeah, I'm here. I said on mute. It's really not easy to flip through unmute things on my phone, so I have to go through the different apps.
Okay.
But anyways,
let me do it again, okay? Okay. Well, Scott, Torment: Tides of Numenera is coming out on February 28th.
I already have it out on my Steam, so I thought it was already released. I didn't realize it was still, I guess, in work. So I've had that on there, playing it.
You've been playing it on Steam Early Access then? What's it like?
It's interesting. Like I said, you start off in this like limbo, and you start answering questions about what you are or whatever, and you just start developing yourself, your character, as you're going on. You're like playing the game and creating your character at the same time instead of just sitting at a character creation screen. You're like kind of going on this journey to form yourself and coalesce into a being, and then you just fall, apparently. you're falling, and you get up, and you immediately get like two characters to talk to, and they start questioning you and asking, you're figuring out who you are, and apparently you are like like the leftovers of a god or something. That, like, yeah, we're done with this avatar. We're going to throw it away, you know, and now you're trying to reassert of what or who you are. So it's rather interesting.
Is it like Torment, in which you don't have an alignment until your actions determine your alignment?
Yeah.
Okay. See, I backed it. I wonder if I should have gotten a if I should have gotten a thing. You know, it's strange. I got a notification that something was being sent to me from via FedEx, and I have no idea what it is. Let's see, $20, digital download copy. Nope, I'm not. I'm not getting any. So I didn't back it enough to get a pre-release version.
Mm. That's weird, because I backed Bards 4, and I did the level that gave me a free copy of Tides of Numenera, but I didn't think it was going to be early access. So that's why it's very throwing me off.
I think
just thought it was. I don't know. Yeah,
I think. Well, I did too. Maybe I should be asking. I should be asking them if I. I have to check my email to see if I got a code and if I should be checking it about now. But officially, it's being released on February 28th. So.
Which is my birthday.
nice. You know, I'm looking at the Nintendo Switch launch titles, and one title surprises me, and that's World of Goo. That's been a while since I played that. I have it somewhere. It's an old, old game, but still, World of Goo.
Yeah.
Have you guys played World of Goo?
Yes, I played it on the original Wii, and that's another game that I would like to, you know, I think I would feel rewarded if I had an online profile with Nintendo and they saw that I bought World of Goo on the Wii years ago, and they said, "Oh, well, here you go, you can download it on the Switch." That would actually make me want to get the Switch. But I know they're going to make me just buy it again, so it's like, why bother?
Well, here's the thing about World of Goo, though. It's not Nintendo. It's someone else.
I know it's
else.
Not Nintendo.
I'm just asking. Here's the thing. Those guys who made World of Goo basically released it on Steam for free, or pay whatever you want. So I'm wondering, if you ask them, I bought it way back on the Wii, I'm a loyal customer, can I get a copy on the NS? I think you'd be surprised.
If you reached out to the developer or the publisher?
Yeah, the developer. Yeah, ask the developer, hey, look, I bought it on the Wii so many years ago. I was one of your first backers, you know, essentially. I took a chance on it. Can I get a copy for the NS? And, you know, you'll never know. I mean, like I said,
That's not a bad idea.
They actually gave it away for free on Steam, so maybe, you know, or maybe they're getting cut. Also, The Binding of Isaac is coming out on the Switch, which is a surprising title for that.
Yeah.
It's really unusual. I mean, here's the thing. I have Binding of Isaac and all this stuff, but I haven't played it yet. But I know what it is, really, you know, because I've covered it, but I haven't actually played it. But, you know.
Binding of Isaac is the grossest cool game I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely gross. I don't know that, but gross, yes.
I mean, the mechanics, just like the way you play the game. I've watched playthroughs, and it looks fun. It just I don't like the scatological humor that much.
Are you a sniper ghost warrior kind of guy, DJ?
I'm not crazy about it.
Or how about Sniper Elite?
Sniper Elite is the one with the bullet cam, right?
Yeah.
Yes, I do like that. I like watching that. Like seeing the way people do that is just ridiculously fun to see.
Actually, you know, I prefer it over the X-ray cam of Mortal Kombat, to tell you the truth.
It is ridiculous seeing the way people set up their shots and then seeing the execution.
Are you
there was a game I want to play. It's Rhyme.
Yeah, you were talking about that a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, it looks like a nice puzzle game where you're exploring this island world and... I guess it's a little bit like Myst, or at least it has an atmosphere of Myst, like an abandoned place, and you're trying to find out what is there, and you're You wake up stranded on a beach, and you're exploring your surroundings. Seems like an interesting game.
Either of you care about Persona 5?
Yes, I do. I like Persona 4. you know what? I don't know that I'll care to finish Persona 5, but I sure as heck will want the soundtrack for that game, because they do a good job with putting those together.
It does look like Dragon Quest XI is coming out this year, but I don't know if I'll get on Switch or 3DS yet.
Here's a question. Well, I was about to ask, what about Prey? It's actually coming out in May.
I will play the heck out of that because I loved the original one.
Do you mean Fire?
No, Prey. There was a game a long time ago called Prey, which it had camera screws in which you're running on the ceiling now. And then Prey 2 was in development for a long time by Human Head, and then it was soft canceled by Bethesda in a controversy. And now Prey, the reboot, is coming out. And
it'll be in the hands of my boys from Arcane.
And I'm wondering if it's going to have anything to do with the sequel, because the sequel looked great. It put you as a human bounty hunter on a space station. And the thing is, you're the same character from the original Prey, so it's sort of like a long way to go. This Native American kid really adapted, you know. He's just sitting there all of a sudden he's teleported onto a ship. And now he's a bounty hunter, intergalactic bounty hunter. And no one on Earth, I don't think anybody from Earth is, or maybe, I don't know. The Prey trailer looked weird last year. The guy with the red eye. It's weird.
TJ, what was the game you said that was samurais and Vikings fighting each other?
For Honor. That's a multiplayer brawler from Ubisoft in which knights and Vikings and samurai, like, you'll take part in different factions on different sides of each team and literally fight each other to the death with swords and spears and maces.
Yeah, it looked interesting at E3 last year. It was one of those things that was, this is so friggin' stupid, but on the other hand, it could be awesome if it's done right.
Everything that I've seen so far has it is like some of the most impactful melee I've seen in a game. Like, because it's like a rock paper scissors thing where you guard either right, left, or above, and you can also attack in such a manner. And it's going back and forth between defending against attacks and trying to strategize against your enemies.
Because I remember playing Dark Age of Camelot, and that was Arthurian versus Viking versus Hibernia, you know, elves and stuff like that. And I really missed that. I mean, it was an MMO, but, you know, like you haven't seen many of the clash of three completely different culture games.
Yeah.
I think, you know, there's also, what was it called, Greatest Warrior, in which, how would a samurai do against a Native American warrior? You know, that sort of stuff.
Yes.
That show.
Deadliest Warrior.
Deadliest Warrior.
For Honor
right.
is like a really great example of Deadliest Warrior in action. another one that I guess you guys probably won't get it because neither of you have PS4. Oh, no, wait, you do. You have PS4,
no,
Scott.
He has a PS4 because he was playing Uncharted 4 with his wife.
Horizon Zero Dawn is coming out on the same day as Torment Tides of Numenera. And that one is looking good. That looks like straight up Witcher with robots.
Oh, nice.
So how about Yooka-Laylee? Any interest there?
Yes, I'm interested. It's colorful and it's fun, and I guess I can stand picking up puzzle pieces for a while I enjoy the art.
The only problem with it is that they have the same annoying voices from Banjo-Kazooie, but I guess that's something to be expected. I mean, I guess the annoying voices are a part of the mythology, so you have to keep in the annoying voices.
Yeah. Like that gibberish that they do that's not even really talking, it's just something.
Not only that, but the bat, I guess he's Laylee, just has this annoying call. You know, it's like high-pitched and annoying.
That was a spot on interpretation of that.
Yeah. Well, anyways, there was something else that I was trying to remember speaking of fighting games, you also have Tekken 7 coming out soon, and I'm wondering if anybody cares.
You know, I liked Soul Calibur and I liked Tekken back in the day, but I don't think they've been doing enough with that series to keep my interest. It always looks like the same thing.
Yeah. How about Shenmue 3?
They confirmed a date on that?
No, sometime this year. Like I said, yeah. It's going to be 2017. I don't know. I'm just really looking forward to BattleTech. I just want BattleTech to come out. I don't know when it's going to be coming out, but I want it.
I'll tell you what. There's a VR title that I'm actually super interested in seeing this year.
Star Trek?
Star Trek Bridge Crew.
I guessed. I knew you were going to say that.
That sounds so fun. And I saw the one where Geordi LaForge was playing it out, and it looked straight up like a classic little handling of the deck on the Star Trek episode. The idea of that.
Yeah. Oh wait, I just realized. Hey, Scott, didn't you say you were really looking forward to South Park: The Fractured Butthole?
Yes, but I didn't think that was coming out soon.
It's coming out in the first quarter.
Oh, okay. I have other games I'm buying, so that'll have to wait.
I wonder when Red Dead Redemption is actually going to come out. It's supposed to be coming out this year, but I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah, all we have is like a 1-minute trailer right now.
Yeah, at least, you know what? The Rockstar has always been good about release dates, I think. I wonder if anybody cares about Ace Combat 7. Oh, wait, you care about Ace Combat 7, DJ?
I do. I hope they end up putting some VR features in that. I think it would be really fun to play that game in VR. I mean, they did that VR for her Valkyrie thing, and that ended up being pretty fun to play with. Or Eve Valkyrie. That's what I was trying
to say. Eve Valkyrie, yeah.
And that was enjoyable. I think that would be great for an air combat game.
You know what I'm looking for? Oh, it's only on PS4? Damn it. Earth Defense Force 5. there's a game that's really... Oh, I forgot. Yeah. Guardians of the Galaxy Telltale version is coming out this year.
That's going to be dynamite.
It'll be interesting. I mean, when was the last time they did a straight-up comedy? It can't have been Sam Max, but... maybe the reboot. Pirate Island.
Are you talking about Telltale? Because that would have been Borderlands. Borderlands was pretty comedic.
Was it? Was it really a straight up comedy?
You can't tell me that in the game where they have a finger gunfight throughout an entire office, there's no comedy.
Well, you see, that's more like gallows humor, though. That's comedy, like Arnold's punching out the camel in Conan the Barbarian.
Yeah, but I don't know. I think Borderlands is always pretty fun.
Before we move on, I'm just trying to get any of the obvious ones we're missing here. And by the way, anybody out there who wanted to write in about what games you're really looking forward to this year, let us know. I mean, I really hope Crackdown 3 comes out this year.
I almost forgot. I mean, are you interested in Dirt 4 this year, Jonah?
I'm not. No, I'm more of a Forza guy. I know Dirt 4 is coming out in like a couple of weeks. But I've never really been for the off-road racing sort of thing. I mean, I got Dirt 3 and Dirt, I forgot the name of it, because they were released free on you know, Gold. You know, the Xbox 360 versions were released. Mm-hmm. They're backwards compatible. But, no, I'm more of a Forza guy, and I'm not into Forza Horizon, so I guess I'm really not into the off-road stuff.
Fair enough.
Yeah, and I'm trying to... Oh, that's right. The Walking Dead, the Overkill game, the first-person shooter Walking Dead, is coming out this year.
Tried that once, and it was terrible.
It's either going to be one big hot mess or really good.
Did you see the one that they tried to do with Merle, and like trying to do some backstory on Merle and I forget who?
I think this is the same game that's being redone. I'm not sure.
Oh, that's bad. That's bad if that's the case.
Yeah. I mean, but the thing is that there's nothing that's really gotten me really, really excited aside from Injustice 2 and Mass Effect Andromeda. I mean, I don't know what kind of year... You know, last year wasn't a very good year for video games because the really big... the really big projects were meh, you know, and I don't know. It's not like 2007 when everything was one hit after the other.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's State of Decay 2. I mean, the problem I have with State of Decay was it's really frustrating. I mean, your people die, and it's like there's nothing you can do to stop it. At least I'd like to feel like I have some control over, you know, over the things, but they just die. Like, it would have been fun if it wasn't so brutal, you know?
Well, this time around, the first one was single player, right?
Or
did they end up with this one? They're going to be allowing you to team up with other people. So that, I would hope, make it a little more manageable.
Well, no, the unmanageable part would be like things happened while you were not playing. So when you turned on your game, oh, by the way, he died and he died because you forgot this and this and this. You know, it's like, I don't need that in my head. I mean, well, yeah, the assaults were really brutal anyway, but still. I don't know.
Well, Jonah, if you've got three other people, you just got to time out your shift so someone is playing every hour of 24 hours of the day.
You know, and I will say this, I am that guy. I mean, there are a lot of people like me, but I really think Star Citizen will be amazing. I'm pretty sure.
I didn't know that had a release. Does that finally
come out this year? You know. They have and here's the thing, they separated into two parts. One was the single player and the other one was the multiplayer. And I'm trying to figure out if which one is better for me. I think the single player, because here's the thing, if I play something like Elite Dangerous, I'm the kind of guy who just wants to explore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to be that guy who discovers the planet. You know, it'd be nice if I would like to see something in which if you discover a planet, you get a percentage of all the money that's made off that planet.
Yeah,
that would be nice.
You're a cutthroat economist.
No, I just want my share of it. You know, oh, that's right. Sea of Thieves. That is so. It's great if you can get together, but you have to have people cooperating to really make that game work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for those who don't know, Sea of Thieves is Microsoft's massively multiplayer pirate game, in which everybody has a role in a pirate ship. And they're all doing their stuff, but, you know, it's really cooperative, and it'll be interesting to see if people can cooperate enough to... Oh, wait! I almost forget. The number one indie game that everybody's raving about is Cuphead, and that's coming out this year.
Yeah. I've been seeing so much stuff about that for so long, I'd seen so much that I thought the game had been out at least three times during 2016.
What is Cuphead?
Cuphead is a cell anime. It's sort of like one of the Behemoths game, but it's not, in which it mimics those old 30s cartoons, and it's really difficult. It is like a Behemoth game in that way. Think insane.
Yeah, it's got a Mickey Mouse Steamboat Willie quality about the animation.
Yeah, think insane Castle Crashers. That'll give you the point. Finally, I don't know how either of you think, but how about Divinity Original Sin 2?
I have never played any of the Divinity games.
Really?
I like the first game, and I'm excited for the second game. But again, it's going to have to wait till later for me to buy it, but I definitely want to get that game when it comes out.
There's a lot of things on your plate. Uh-huh. There's a lot of stuff on your plate if you're playing games.
I still haven't gotten Dragon Quest Builders, and I want to get that. That's why I was saying that's already out. But, like, I really love in Divinity how you can use the environment to your advantage. And there really isn't a whole lot of RPGs that do that. Even Pillars doesn't really do that. Divinity, you can, like, see, like, oil slick on the floor, and you could cast fire on it and set fire to it, or it could be raining and you shoot lightning bolts and it amplifies your electrical attack. It's just really cool.
Yeah. By the way, you also have Conan Exiles, one of the few games that allows you to edit your dick size. The last game to do that, if I remember, was one of the Saints Row games. Someone speculated it's because they wanted to be able to have the breast slider and not make it seem like they're sexist by not including the male equivalent. anyways.
Okay.
By the way, have any of you played Frozen Synapse? Because the sequel's coming out this year, too.
Oh, okay. Frozen Synapse. What is that?
It's the Wireframe XCOM-style game. It's a tactical strategy game, but everything's in Wireframe.
Ooh. No, I haven't played this.
Really? Oh, fuck. I almost forgot. Full Throttle Remastered. I'm really looking forward to that because I loved it when I was growing up. Well, not growing up. I was 15.
I loved that game, too. That was a fun game.
Yeah, especially the march of the little mechanical bunnies. No, they did the Ride of the Valkyries. And you see them all blowing up. All your little. Oh, also, I almost forgot that also that viral game that everybody's talking about is Hello Neighbor. And
yes, I had the opportunity to play that at PAX South, and it was good.
I haven't heard of this Hello Neighbor.
It's a game in which it's sort of like Rear Window, the game in which you're sneaking around a guy's house, and he has dark secrets, and you're trying to figure them out, but you don't. But you're trying to avoid being spotted by him. The AI is supposed to be magnificent. By the way, there's a video that says that there's enough clues to let you know what's going on in the game, that he's probably kidnapped women and children and put them in his dungeon, which is what they're speculating the game is about, which makes sense. But it also is uncomfortable in which you're just like, should I be doing this?
Yeah. You're breaking and entering.
Yeah, and...
Are you stopping the guy from doing this?
I mean, trying to find what's in his secret basement. I mean, we don't know exactly. I mean, there's a lot of speculation based on the information. But think of it as a more domestic version of Resident Evil 7, in which you're sneaking around this house, which is creepy and in its own way, but not with, you know, corpses and animal things and all that stuff. No, it's a regular house.
Yeah, and there's a lot of things you can do with the house. Like, basically it starts out, you move into a new neighborhood, and you look in your neighbor's window, and he's, like, boarding up a door with a key and has a key card slider on it. And so you just decide, because you're bored, you're going to figure out what's going on with that. And there's so much stuff you could do with the house. Like, in my time with it, I slipped sleeping pills into his milk. Which, by the way, he drinks milk right out of the bottle like a barbarian, if that tells you how evil he is. And
it sounds like an interesting game, and I don't think it's any worse than what you do in Grand Theft Auto 5. So
thing, though, watch the first trailer. It is scary, and you wouldn't think it's scary because the characters, the art style it uses is sort of that bright Christmassy, you know, those really those characters that you might see in something like, I don't know, Team Fortress 2. You know, it's not realistic and gritty and gory like Resident Evil 7, but it still is really scary. I would like to know how the hell he becomes a giant, though.
Yeah.
There's one thing in the trailer which has him becoming a giant, and you're like inside a dollhouse. I don't understand how that happens. Maybe it's a nightmare, but it's just a strange game.
It's the most happily colored horror game I've ever seen. And the horror really just comes out of the fact of trying to dodge this guy, because when he's near you, like, you get like this constant throbbing on the screen. Like, you get a vibration when he's closer, and it grows louder and louder. And when he spots you, there's just a sudden, like, someone slamming on a piano.
He just stares at you. He stares at you, and that's it. Game over. Or at least you get – or whatever it is. Reset.
Yeah, it's nerve-wracking.
Yeah, anyways, we've been talking about this a long time, so we're going to move on to the first news item. You can go ahead with this. Let me see, is it me or... No, I'll do it. Fallout 4 surpasses Skyrim to become Bethesda's most successful game ever, and this comes to us from GameStop. Or at least that's what Pete Hines says. Appearing in the Kinda Funny Game cast, Bethesda marketing executive Pete Hines said, quote-unquote, Fallout 4 has to be the most successful game we've ever launched in our company's history, more than Skyrim in terms of what we did. It's not immediately clear what Hines meant by most successful, because Skyrim, which was released in November 2011, sold more than 20 million copies as of 2014. Fallout 4, which came out in November 2015, shipped 12 million copies on launch day, although Bethesda has not provided a hard sales figure for the game since. Skyrim got a sales boost last year with the release of the Special Edition Remaster. Also during the interview, Hines responded to the critique that Fallout 4 did not do well to set itself apart from its predecessors. He agreed that the game shares commonalities with Fallout 3, but said the nature of the beast with sequels is the balancing act between preserving the core formula and pushing things forward. Sony's Uncharted series feels the same. Hines said, if you played Uncharted 4 and that was your first game, I think you might have a very different reaction to what the game is than if you, like me, you played 1, 2, and 3, because Uncharted 4 is more of 1, 2, and 3. Finally, Hines offered a high-level lease for what Fallout 4 and Skyrim developer Bethesda Game Studios is going to make next. He said, whether it's Fallout or Elder Scrolls or whatever they're going to do next, I think their mantra is, we really got to step up our game. In other news, the game High Resolution Texture Pack just came out on Steam this week. So go ahead, Scott. I know you want to say something here.
Yes. I think the point with Uncharted, though, is, yeah, you do have a lot of the same mechanics. You're climbing all over ruins, shooting at bad guys, and looking for little hidden treasures. But you also have an overarching story, and it goes through, you know, four different games, and it's a story, it builds on it, so it's not just a game mechanic. You have a really good story, and I don't think there's been enough story, unfortunately, with the Fallout and Skyrim series, so I don't know if I would call it the same.
that's always like, going to be a problem.
Yeah, okay. It is a balancing act, that's true, and I know I think it's Ed Beach. I hope I'm getting the right person.
Ed Beach, yes.
No, I mean for Civilization VI, Beach, yeah. He was talking about how Sid Meier's told him the formula is to keep like a third new, a third old, and then
experiment.
Change. Yeah, experiment with a third or something like that. And it's some sort of balance there. And I don't know how much you can compare fantasy to
post-apocalyptic.
Yeah. I feel like it's still a little bit apples and oranges because, I mean, guns versus magic, they are different. They feel different. You know, I mean, for some people, it's just a skin, but to me, they really do feel different.
Here's the thing. He did make the difference. He did say that people, you know, he was dismissing the claims that Fallout 4 is too much like Fallout 3. You know, so it's apples to apples.
Like Fallout 3. Of course, it's going to be like Fallout 3. You know, you have guns and you have the special and you have 3D.
But that's not true. I mean, here's the thing. Fallout New Vegas felt a lot different than Fallout 3. A lot different. That. Oh, by the way, there's also that thing. I don't know if it's been confirmed or not that Oblivion's working on Fallout New Vegas 2? Or is it still just a rumor?
I think that's a rumor. It's a rumor because people saw the image of that. They heard Project Louisiana. Then they saw that green image with the tobacco pipe and the wheat leaf and the little quote. And everybody that did not play Pillars could not realize that that was Idair. And he was talking about his god. It was so obvious. If you had played the game, you would know. And everybody thought, oh, this could be Fallout. No, it can't be. Where nobody talks about gods in Fallout. Come on.
That's not true. The Cult of the Atom, come on.
Mm-mm.
Uh-huh.
It's not the same. It's like this ethereal radiation cloud. It's not the same as a god coming back and coming back. It's just not the same.
They worship the fucking atom.
Yeah, they want to blow up. That's exactly what they want.
Their god is the atom bomb.
Are we worried that God was going to come back and then the dream we would have to wake up? There's no waking up. They want to go to sleep, basically. So it's not the same.
How about you?
And it's a pipe and a wheat leaf. How is that the atom? It made no sense.
Okay, how about you, TJ? TJ, how do you react to Pete Hines' statements here?
I mean, I don't know. I think Fallout 4 is like the obvious amalgam of Skyrim and Fallout 3 to a degree that nothing really changed all that much.
With all the factions in Fallout 4, that game desperately needed Obsidian's touch.
Mm-hmm.
You had to build more, at least.
But like, you want to talk about like games that are run the same. Skyrim isn't the same as The Elder Scrolls 4, and Elder Scrolls 4 sure as heck isn't the same as Elder Scrolls 3.
Or like, Daggerfall, for that matter. I mean,
you can't tell me that that you can do sequels and they're going to always be sort of the same, and then have the Elder Scrolls series under your belt.
But you know, I think he admits this because he said that whether it's Fallout or Elder Scrolls or whatever they're going to do, their mantra is that we really got to step up our game. But that's not a mantra for people. I mean, we can always improve, but that's not what he said. He said step up our game, which implies to me what they weren't on their game before.
Yeah.
Are they saying he was lazy?
Or just saying that they're hearing what people are saying, and if they're going to impress on the next one, they're going to try harder or try to
impress more. I don't know. I don't think that means that they were lazy. That means they're going to try harder, you know, try something different maybe. Because, I mean, the games, you know, between Fallout 1 and 2 to 3 was a dramatic change. And I guess some people might feel that there's not enough dramatic change between 3 and 4, even though I felt with building the settlements that was pretty big. And maybe they didn't push that enough in Fallout 4.
I'm willing to bet you we're going to see another Fallout game before we see another Elder Scrolls game. Because Skyrim makes so much money even now that they're going to think, why do we need it? Also, they have Elder Scrolls Online. But I'm just saying, I don't know if there's anything they think they need to change, you know, to make – there's nothing that says they have to make a – there's nothing compelling them to have to make another Elder Scrolls right now.
Come up with a good story idea.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. People are making content for that game constantly, especially on PC. I don't think Bethesda thinks they need to because they're still selling Elder Scrolls 5. I mean, yeah, they sell the remastered version. They're selling it for $60 on the Switch. And I know I just saw Scott's eyes roll.
They can sell whatever price they want. Doesn't mean I'm going to buy it.
Even on the Switch, it's not a $60 game.
No.
Yeah.
So anyways, we're going to move on. Go ahead, TJ.
Alrighty. Rainbow Six Siege Year 2. Free loot. Better matchmaking. Subversive operators. From PC Gamer. When Ubisoft first announced that the second year of Rainbow Six Siege would add another 8 operators, it felt like a pleasant surprise for a shooter whose future was unclear. Creative director Xavier Marquise explained that Siege's first year was spent trying to win the trust of the players to prove that a multiplayer-only shooter could thrive in 2016. Now that Siege has more momentum than ever before, its second year is about putting that momentum to good use and fixing some of Siege's most glaring flaws. More stable matchmaking, better hit registration, and a new loot system are a great complement to the 2 new operators who significantly shake up the meta. Quote, health is a major focus of this year, Marquise explains. While Siege uses dedicated servers for the actual matchmaking, secondary servers like voice chat are implemented on a peer-to-peer system. The problem is that due to the interconnectivity of these services, if one is experiencing problems, there is a risk that everything could shut down. Marquise says that year two will bring these problems to an end. One by one, each of the secondary services that uses peer-to-peer will be switched over to dedicated servers. New operators, Mira and Jackal, each subvert the current meta in fascinating ways. Jackal represents anti-roaming. This attacking operator can see the footprints of defenders and, after scanning them for a few seconds, reveals their position every 15 seconds. What's more, footprints have a heat signature, so you can easily tell how close you are to a target just by the color of their prints. Caviera, the true roamer for defenders, remains threatening. Her silent step ability conceals her footsteps. So Jackal will still need to keep his wits about him when Caviera is in play. Likewise, Mira, the defending operator, is a real game changer for Siege. She can make windows through reinforced walls, giving the defenders protected visibility into rooms they would otherwise never have. Before Mira, murder holes were a common tactic to monitor various passages to prevent a flank. That is, blowing a hole in a wall with a shotgun so that you could see through to the other side. The only problem, murder holes work both ways. One of the last big changes coming in year two is a revamped loot system, free from any microtransactions. The system will work alongside the current in-game shop, but has a chance to reward players at the end of each match with various drops like new gun skins and more.
Okay, well, you're the Siege player here, Scott. I mean, TJ, go ahead and let us know what you think about this.
I am excited. I like the idea of Mira because, yes, murder holes were sort of like the makeshift way that everybody came up with to see through to another side of the wall. But if somebody spots a murder hole, they are going to know that a person is on the other side of it, and you can just shoot through that wall and kill the player. This seems like a cool way of making a sort of more secure murder hole. As for the peer-to-peer system, yes, I'm excited for that because, yes, I've played quite a few games where something went wrong with either the voice chat or something else, and just we've had people drop from the match. And Rainbow Six Siege, like any team-based game, is ruined the moment that you have someone missing from your team and it's a 4-versus-5 match. Because a 4-versus-5, good players versus good players, the four are always going to be handicapped.
Well, it sounds like you have a power play, you know, sort of like in hockey, the power play.
Yeah, except it's a power play that is just determined by your toaster of a connection or Ubisoft's bad servers. And I'm happy to see that they're getting enough support for this, that they'll be able to make these changes to improve the life of the game.
Sort of reminds me of Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare 2, in which they're constantly doing stuff during the game. I think it's because it's sort of pseudo-free-to-play, because if you have EA Access, you have this game for free, but still. I mean, like I said, there was a lot of criticism about Murder Siege, because he said murder holes. You know, and a lot of people still don't like it from the basis that you have to grind to get characters and stuff like that. You know, you still have that grinding mechanic. But this is one of the proof that if you have a stable fan base who is devoted to your product, then you keep going on and on and on. You know, just so long as you don't expand your... A lot of problems with games is that they want to have more people than they'll actually attract. They say, we have this many people. Let's try to get more. Why? You have a stable population. Just keep them happy, and other people may come. You know, not every game is supposed to be for everybody.
Yeah. And, I mean, Siege had the ubiquitous task of going up against Overwatch before Overwatch was even out. And they've performed admirably. I mean, Ubisoft obviously has some resources, but going up against Blizzard is something that a lot of people have done, and it didn't go well for them.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the last topic. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. Wrong button. Damn it, Louis. Hold on. Oh, man. Just scroll. There. Hold on. Okay. E3 2017 will be open to the public. This is from PC Gamer. The Entertainment Software Association has announced via GameSpot that the E3 2017 will be open to the public, where in recent years it has been limited to industry and media professionals. Starting this Monday, February 13th, the ESA will begin selling 15,000 general access tickets for the trade show. Tickets will go on sale for $150 on the 13th, but the price will rise to $250 after that. passes will get attendees access to the show floor with all the booths and game demos, as well as panel discussions and something or other involving Jeff Knightley.
Keighley.
For vaguely,
Keighley?
Oh, Keighley. Special benefits associated with Keighley's own E3 programming, such as developer interviews and more. ESA Senior VP of Communications, Rich Taylor, tells GameSpot the change was a strategic decision based on feedback from last year's public E3 live event. According to Taylor, the public wanted access to the show floor, and game publishers wanted them there. And with that price ticket, I think that'll limit some of the riffraff coming in.
Well, here's the thing. It's kind of wrong. It's supposed to be 150 for the first 1,000 tickets. Then it's 250 after that. So,
okay.
One of the things that I know that I'm going to be a little bit wary of is the fact that not every publisher gives private screenings, you know, or at least am I going to have to be waiting behind people who don't, or just there to play the games? On the other hand, you know who's not going to be on the show floor? EA and Activision. And they're doing their shit outside E3 again, you know? Basically, they want to have direct contact with the fans, and they don't care about the media press. The fake Kazurai account joke that EA said that, well, if you want to play unfinished games, wait until they're launched. So, here's the question for you, Scott. Would you pay $150 or $250 to get into E3? Okay.
No, I would not.
No, and I mean, I've heard from a lot of people that these tickets aren't worth $250.
No, they said that about Call of Duty. The Call of Duty EXP, the first one, and everybody went. I'm willing to guarantee that these will sell out.
I'm sure they'll sell out. If it's like 15,000, of course you'll find 15,000 people that want to go. But that doesn't mean that everybody wants to go. I don't want to go.
I know. I'm just saying enough people are going to want to go.
And you can't make Scott go, Jonah.
No, you can't.
Well, I can always get him in for free as a media pass, and I'm pretty sure he doesn't mind free.
Oh, free is fine.
I'm not going to pay for your flight or hotel.
No, it's fine. I know. I have a job and life and all that stuff, so it's not really something I can go to.
Well, here's the thing. One of the things that they really should emulate is Leipzig. Or is it called, still called Leipzig? Or Gamescom, anyway. In which they have one day that's for the public. And I don't think it costs $150. You know, I think it's only like $10 or $15 on their equivalent. But it's like one day out of the 5 days, I think it's 5 days of the conference, it's for the public. Just let all the public come in for that one day. And they play their hearts out, and then the rest of the four games are for the press. And I think ESA should take that version, you know, just do that instead. Just have 60,000 fans with like $50 per ticket, you know, just come in and what's it called, play the games and do all that stuff, and you know, give them free little door prize. Oh, they just get the swag that they give away anyway. There's plenty of swag. That's why people want to go to E3, because of the swag. They want the swag. Those T-shirts are like throwing it to piranhas. You know, they smell blood. We want a T-shirt. Everybody wants a T-shirt. Oh, all the mediums are out. I don't mind having the XXXR large T-shirt anyway. It's sort of like a lounging thing. You know, it goes to my knees. So... TJ, have you gone to E3?
I have not.
Okay.
It's I was probably going to make this year the year that I actually make it there.
Yeah, it's too bad you didn't go to E3s of ancient, like back in 2002 when it was just batshit crazy. You had
I gotta say, having been to the Call of Duty XP event. And having been to PAX South, those are the two that I've been to, I really sort of dig the PAX South vibe more. I have always enjoyed indie games. I've always enjoyed working with indie games far more than I've enjoyed working with mainstream games, only because mainstream games, there's so much out there already that by the time it's released, nothing is surprising. I mean, you know what you're getting.
Sony and Microsoft really pimp out the indie games that are going to be on their consoles. And you also have that section for indie games. I don't know how many people are going to be there this year. Last year it was but I did get to meet Richard Garriott. The previous year was a lot of them. So it tends to ebb and flow. So I'm hoping to see Tim Schafer there showing off Psychonauts 2.
Yeah, and I really dig the indie game scene because you don't often hear too much about that stuff going into it. And there's so much opportunity for things to surprise in the indie game community.
Like Cuphead.
That's the exception. I know everything I have ever needed to know about Cuphead ever.
Anyways, we're going to move on to gaming history. Go ahead, TJ.
Okay. Gaming history, the Capcom 5. The Capcom 5 are five video games unveiled by Capcom in late 2002 and published from March 2003. At a time when Nintendo's GameCube console had failed to capture market share, Capcom announced five new GameCube titles with the apparent goal of boosting hardware sales and showing off third-party developer support. Capcom USA followed up with the confirmation that they would be exclusive to the GameCube. The five games were PN03, a futuristic third-person shooter, Beautiful Joe, a side-scrolling action platformer, Dead Phoenix, a shoot-'em-up, Resident Evil 4, the survival horror third-person shooter, and Killer 7, an action-adventure game with first-person shooter elements. Though not directly related to each other, they were all overseen by Resident Evil creator Shinji Mikami. And except Killer 7, developed by Capcom's production studio 4. Capcom USA later clarified that only Resident Evil 4 was intended to be exclusive. The initial announcement was due to a miscommunication with their parent company. During the Nintendo Entertainment System and Super Nintendo eras, Nintendo and Capcom enjoyed a close relationship with Mega Man as one of the NES' most prominent franchises. This closeness was partially due to Nintendo's monopoly of the video game console market, which allowed the company to compel third-party developers to release exclusive content according to Nintendo's schedule. Sega's rival Genesis system forced Nintendo to relax some of its restrictions on third parties with respect to the SNES. However, relations with third-party developers reached a turning point when Nintendo decided to retain a proprietary cartridge-based format for the Nintendo 64 in the face of Sony's disc-based PlayStation. Due to increased manufacturing costs and severely limited cartridge memory capacity, many third parties, Capcom included, moved to the PlayStation to start new franchises such as Resident Evil. On this new platform, developers could create bigger games while avoiding the restriction of ordering the manufacture of expensive proprietary cartridges through Nintendo, which could lead to under- or overstocking inventory, which might eat into revenue. This third-party abandonment allowed the PlayStation to outsell the Nintendo 64 during that console generation. With the GameCube, Nintendo tried to reclaim third-party developers and catch up to Sony's PlayStation 2 by featuring disc-based media and powerful system hardware. However, in the first year after its launch, Nintendo only sold 4.7 million consoles. In this climate of flagging sales, Capcom held a surprise press conference in Japan in November 2002, announcing five new titles for the GameCube, the Capcom 5. The games would be developed...
Be developed in-house.
Okay. The games would be developed in-house by Capcom's production studio 4, with Resident Evil series Shinji Mikami as supervisor. The lone exception was Killer 7, to be produced at Grasshopper Manufacture, with Mikami as co-writer alongside director Suda51. When pressed for comment on console exclusivity, A Capcom USA representative confirmed the claim, generating the perception that Capcom was hoping to boost the GameCube's sales and reputation. A statement on their website echoed this support for GameCube. However, Capcom soon rescinded their confirmation, blaming it on miscommunication with the parent company. They clarified that only Resident Evil 4 would definitely be exclusive. Of the five games, Dead Phoenix was canceled, and only PNO3 retained its status as a GameCube exclusive, though it was a critical and commercial failure. Both Beautiful Joe and Killer7 sold modestly, the former despite critical acclaim, and the latter owing to polarized reviews. Even so, Killer7 gained a significant cult following, effectively launching the career of Suda51. Resident Evil 4 was the runaway success of the five, though its GameCube sales were undercut by the announcement of a Sony PlayStation 2 port to be released later in 2005. Beautiful Joe also saw a PlayStation 2 version with expanded features, and Killer7 debuted on multiple platforms simultaneously. Since the release of the Nintendo 64, Nintendo has struggled to attract the third-party developers like Capcom to produce games for its systems. Industry analysis see the Capcom 5 case, particularly the loss of GameCube exclusivity for Resident Evil 4, as a major blow to Nintendo-Capcom relations, and it's emblematic and is emblematic of Nintendo's failure to attract third-party support during the GameCube era.
Yeah, which is also why you won't see Mega Man in any Smash Brothers games, because Nintendo still has hard feelings about that, so don't count on seeing any Capcom characters in Super Smash Brothers.
That's not true. Mega Man was in Smash 4.
Okay, well, I'm just saying, there aren't many Capcom titles that appear on Smash Brothers. I'm just going to say that.
Yeah. It took a really, really, really long time for Capcom to start doing things with Nintendo again. EA had a similar situation with them with the sports games because Nintendo tried to go and do its own thing.
Yeah. Anyways, never mind. So anyways, we do have listener feedback. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. Listener feedback from Donovan on episode 454. Nintendo should make money off its intellectual property accumulated over the past decades. I'm sure that a lot of people would like to own an online library like that of Steam, Origin, Uplay, and etc., exclusively of Nintendo games. And I agree with Donovan. I would love that. I'm not sure if I understand what he meant, but I think he says to sell the Nintendo games on Steam or Origin or something. And if that's what he meant, I would agree with that, and that would be really awesome.
What even be better would be a Netflix type of thing in which you could rent one Nintendo game for as long as you want. You know, like I said, like you do with Netflix. You know, instead of a disc, though, you just get a game that you can play until you get tired of the game. Or actually, more like, oh damn, what's the name of that friggin' service?
Gamefly.
Yeah, have an online Gamefly like service on online for Nintendo.
Yeah, I think Nintendo really should avail its library more and not be so. Because I mean, their software is very easy to emulate, and it doesn't take a lot of program to emulate it on any of their consoles. I think it's very easy to emulate on PC, so transferring it to that, or even mobile, would not be a bad idea. I think that would be really good for them. I don't know if they're going to do that, though, because they took a real long time to release games on even the 3DS, so I just don't know.
And if they think their people are going to buy their online service just so they could play Bubble Bobble for a month, they're crazy.
Mm-hmm. I mean, seriously, make something that is more convenient than someone I might know, might not know, just going online and downloading this stuff for free.
I mean, it's like, I would love to play Crystalis or Battle of Olympus NES games, and those are not very popular ones compared to others like Zelda and Star Tropics and Mario, and they just seem to take forever releasing these. You can't get Link to the Past on the 3DS, but you can get like all the other games for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave some iTunes comments. I am at Jonah Falcon on Twitter.
I am at Johnny Chugs on Twitter.
I am at Alpha Shark on Twitter.
And I hope you guys enjoyed last week's a cameo appearance by Dan Quick. Dan Quick. For whatever reason, I wanted to say Dave Quick. I know that's not right. It's Dan Quick. And also Paul Nowak joining us on the podcast for the 10-year anniversary thing.
I like Paul. I wish his life wasn't so busy so he could join us some more.
Yes.
We will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Take care, y'all.